Tá, sí, kam bitam shapan shikapa chudisha. Kripa sindu bhava chapati tam pavanevyo vaishnavebyo namo namaha. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. It's November 23rd, 2015. Skype class from Hilo, Hawaii. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 7. Further inquiries by Vidura, Text 34. Danasya tapaso vapi.
Danasya tapaso vapi.
Yach chesta purtayo palam.
Yach chesta purtayo palam.
Pavasastasya yo dharma.
Pavasastasya yo dharma.
Yascha pumsa utapadi.
Danasya, of charity.
Of charity.
Tapasya. Of penance.
Vapi.
Lake. Yat.
That which.
Cha.
And.
Ishta. Endeavor.
Portaiho.
Of reservoirs of water. Palam.
Fruit of results.
Pravasastasya.
One who is away from home.
Yaha.
That which.
Dharma.
Duty.
Yacha.
And which.
Pumsaha.
Of men.
Uta.
Described.
Apadi. In danger. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Please also describe the fruit of results of charity and penance and of digging reservoirs of water. Please describe the situations of persons who are away from home and also the duty of a man in an awkward position. Purport. The digging of reservoirs of water for public use is a great work of charity, and retiring from family life after 50 years of age is a great act of penance performed by the sober human being. Danasya tapasova pi yach chesta purtrayo palam pravasastasya yo dharma yascha pumsa utapadi. Please also describe the fruit of results of charity and penance and of digging reservoirs of water. Please describe the situation of persons who are away from home and also the duty of a man in an awkward position. So Prabhupada says in the purport, retiring from family life after 50 years of age is a great act of penance performed by the sober human being. So this is referring to the vanaprastha and probably also the sannyas stage of human life, the systems of ashramas. And the ashram system is something amazing because it's taking the natural biological and physiological, psychological changes that a human being goes through in his or her life and connecting them with God. You know, in every culture, there's rites of passage, right? There's a celebration when a baby's born and when they go to school and when they graduate, when they, you know, get married, when they get their first job, and so forth and so on, when they retire. But these festivities in the modern day are becoming more and more secular. Originally, they were all connected with God. They were performed in the church, you know, the baby's baptized in the church, the wedding happens in the church, at least some of those major events, you know, death is presided over by a priest and so forth. in the Vedic system, all of these life changes are very much connected, not just ritualistically with some kind of religion, but with the concept of self-realization, with the ultimate dharma, savaipum samparo dharma. Here Vidura is asking the duty of one in an emergency. But the ashrams are connected with our eternal duty. And Srila Prabhupada regularly referred to the varnas as a social system and the ashrams as a spiritual system. So what's amazing about that is that the ashrams deal with the body and the mind. What the body and the mind goes through very naturally on its own, if there were no religious systems at all. In fact, we could say that even among many of the species lower than human beings, there is some kind of life cycle or life change which corresponds to these ashrams. And yet this is a spiritual system, so how is that? And the answer, of course, is in our Yukta Vairagya philosophy, in our Achinta Beta Beta philosophy of life, that it's not that the spiritual and the material are two entirely separate things. Just like Krishna says right after the verse about approaching a spiritual master, Tadvidi Pranipatenan, the next verse he said that you will no longer be an illusion because you will see that everything is in me and is mine. So this body is also Krishna's, this mind is also Krishna's. When Krishna speaks to the gopis at Kurukshetra, and Prabhupada comments in Krishna book that our mental activities are also Krishna's energy. So what is this body made out of? What is this mind made of? It's also Krishna's energy. Agnir mahi gaganamam bhumarudra shastra kalasta tatva manasi tija gatayani yas madbhavanti bhavanti bhishanti yamcha govindu madhipurusham tam maham vacham. They're also Krishna's energy. Therefore, this is the great mystery of the material creation. You know, the Christians say in the Bible, Jews, Christians, that God created the world and he saw that it was good. I was like, wait a minute, the Bhagavad Gita says, Dukalayama Shashvatam. Yes, it's a place of misery when you don't connect it with Krishna. But when you connect it with Krishna, as Prabhupada writes in the description of autumn in the Krishna book, the materialists see everything as aggressive and the devotees see everything as happily situated. When you connect it with Krishna, you become happy. So this system of ashrama, we're going to look at the whole system with a focus on the vanaprastha ashram, is a way of taking the natural cycle and progress of the body and mind and connecting it with Krishna so as to become happy and to become detached from illusion and attached to Krishna in a relatively painless and seamless way. So let's first talk about the natural life cycle. So among human beings and among most species of life, there is a childhood. We're not born and immediately we're at full adult capacity. Maybe some species, but generally not. And in this childhood, we're vulnerable. We're particularly vulnerable. We're particularly in need of protection. Species that don't protect their young have thousands of young at a time. The more protection that's given to the children, the fewer children that are born at a time. And in many species, at least of the higher entities, the children get some kind of training, even again among the animals. They're trained how to find food, how to hide from predators, and so forth. And in human society, there was a very long period of training. A very long period of training. Childhood goes until at least like 14, 15, 16 years of age, biologically speaking. For a boy, perhaps a little longer. And during that time, there's training. And what is their training in? There's training in how to function as an adult. Primarily, the training given in all societies was how to earn a livelihood. And Prabhupada talks about this in the second canto of the Bhagavatam, that the Gurukula had as one of its main purposes to give specific training for a livelihood. Livelihood is your varna. So one of the main purposes, again, in all societies, was, how are you going to maintain yourself? As Krishna tells Arjuna, no one can maintain his physical body without work. And in the Varna Ashram system, that way of livelihood is a Varna. It's something sacred. And one is also trained how to be responsible. Particularly, one is trained how to be obedient to sadhu, shastra, and guru. But anyway, there's some kind of education going on among all human societies. Even in very primitive societies, there's some kind of an education, at least in earning the livelihood, something like that. You know, some tribal society, at least they're taught how to capture animals or how to grow crops or some kind of training. And then there's some sort of marriage. Some kind of mating is going on, mating and reproduction. And at this point, a person is engaged in earning a livelihood. And again, such goes on even among the animals. They're mating, they're having children, and they're now independently taking care of themselves, whether in singly or with their mate or with a family group. And the same thing goes on in human society, that one is expected, when they become a young adult, to take responsibility, to reproduce in a responsible way, and to add to the economic good of their family unit and of society. And then one reaches a point where that's over. One's reproductive life is over, that the ability to reproduce either stops or is greatly diminished. Interest in reproduction is stopped. One's ability and interest in earning a livelihood goes down. And, of course, in animal society, when that happens, generally you just get killed by a predator. Among human society, we have something called retirement. And in retirement, you stop your work, you leave your job, you give up your business, you've had some savings. Many times in retirement, people will travel. I remember my my parents traveling to, you know, all over the world on cruise ships and so forth. You start indulging in your hobbies, whatever. You start doing slowing down and becoming more detached from family life and from earning a living. And then at the very end of life, as one's functions get smaller and smaller, I read an interesting essay once about how when we're born, our consciousness is completely self-absorbed, and then we gradually care more and more about the world and doing things for the world. And then as we reach middle age, we realize there's not much we can do for the world. And then when we get to really old age, we go back to just thinking about ourselves and our body. And so generally at the end of life, a person is just preparing for death. In modern society, unfortunately, that often involves going to some kind of an old age home where you're really now retired from everything. You're not really involved in anything. Of course, people in those old age homes, they're often just meditating on some television shows, but they're just preparing for death. They're civilly dead. They're no longer members of society. So the retired persons are still members of society, but the persons preparing for death, they've separated themselves from society, either by choice or by force, and their focus is more on their own death. So these are the natural human cycles, and indeed even for subhuman beings, this is their natural biological cycle. And this it happens just like the Varnas exist, whether or not there's a Varnashram system. There are intellectuals, there's government, there's agriculture and business, and there's services and arts and so forth. So in the same way, these natural biological cycles happen, whether they're connected with Krishna or not. So what is the way of connecting them with Krishna? And what specifically are the activities of the Vanaprastha Ashram? And how are these things, how can we avoid the setbacks or the misunderstandings for these? So the four ashrams parallel, again, this normal biological cycle. First, there's the student life. So in the ashram system, in student life, you're not just learning how to earn a livelihood, but you're learning how to earn a livelihood in sacrifice. Yagnartat kamano natra, loko yam karma bandana taratam karma kotaya, mukta sangha samacha, sarvagatam brahma, nitya yagya pratistitam. Like this verse is talking about charity and penance. You're learning to do your varna, your occupation. If you do it as a varna, then you're doing it as a yagya, you're giving in charity in various ways, like here it's saying creating water supplies for people. And you're also doing it as a penance. So that's, and the devotion to, especially as we mentioned briefly, to sadhu, shastra, and guru. So in school you're trained to have sadhu, shastra, and guru as your authority. And then a person reaches their physical maturity. And at this point there's several paths that the person can take. They can choose to stay a student their whole life. Now, such a path would be have been very rare in a Vedic society, just as it'd be very rare today. So, in today's society, it would look like somebody, you know, gets a college degree, then they get a master's, then they get a PhD, then they get another PhD, then they do postdoctoral research, and they never leave the academy. They remain, they don't even become a teacher. They stay as a student. I know in traditional Jewish society, they have perpetual students, although they do marry. The Jews don't have a concept of lifelong brahmacharya, but they do have a concept of a man being a perpetual student, particularly a man. And if the village supports him in this, they're considered very pious. So just simply to study and to be an assistant. The brahmacharis are compared to the legs in the ashram system. And they're simply assisting, particularly a brahmachari may be an assistant to a sannyasi. So the brahmachari may stay in the home of their guru. You can imagine that would be a little awkward. You know, the guru is generally a householder. And for somebody to stay there when they're 20, 30, 40 years old might be a little awkward. So many brahmacharis, if they stayed brahmacharis, they'd move into a mat. And they'd serve under a sannyasi. And they'd live something like the Christian monks. But again, that's a tiny, tiny portion of society because generally, once a human being reaches maturity, they want some independence. They want to have their own direction in life, and the brahmachari does not have that. The brahmachari is strictly under the thumb of the guru, even in terms of their eating. If the guru doesn't call them to eat, they don't eat. They don't decide their own program, just like a child in school. You know, the school says this is what you have to study and this is how many credits you have to take and you just have to do it. You can't say, well, this is what I want to study and this is not. That's not brahmachari life. Brahmachari means you're a child. You're treated like a child. So very, very few people wish to be treated like a child their whole life. But that is one option, that they stay as a student, practically speaking, like a child of the society. And we've seen some people in our Krishna consciousness movement who really do live as brahmacharis their whole life. There was one devotee who passed away recently in London, and he not only did he live in the brahmachari ashram his whole life, but he did simple menial service, totally under the direction of his authorities, for his whole life. Practically never left the temple and so forth, and was just a student. He was not a teacher or a preacher in any way. He was just engaged in deity worship and so forth. So sometimes we see that. Then another alternative is to go to the directly to the vanaprastha or sannyas ashram. So if somebody in the brahmachari ashram wants to remain brahmachari in the sense of remaining celibate, but at the same time they want to express their mature understanding in a more independent way, then they go directly to the vanaprastha, or they can even go directly to the sannyas ashram. Although that would be unusual. We have Sankaracharya and Madhvacharya, who took sannyas at a very young age, Sankaracharya at 8, I believe, and Madhvacharya, I believe, at 12. So this is very unusual for a person to take a vow of sannyas, preparation for death at a young age. In every tradition, though, there's been people who did this. So this is especially, I would say, the Buddhists, the Jains, are well known for this sort of behavior. And not only men, but also women. So a person takes a vow, like you can take a vow to be a Jain monk or nun who does not live in a monastery under tight authority, but is a traveling teacher and preacher, etc. So that may be there. And we see this phenomenon certainly in our Krishna consciousness movement. So we see people who we commonly refer to as brahmacharis, but they're not really brahmacharis, they're really vanaprastas. They're not living under some tight control in an ashram. They may have their own place. They have their own preaching program. They may or not be traveling, but they're teaching and they're preaching, and they're really in the renounced order of life, not in the student order of life. And of course, we have those who go directly to the sannyas ashram. Now, with the GBC rules, you could not go from the brahmachari ashram, which ends at age 24 or 25 maximum, to the sannyas ashram. I think the youngest you're allowed to take sannyas is 45. But you could go to the vanaprastha ashram as a training for entering the sannyas ashram. So that's another path. And then the third path, which is the one taken by the vast majority of people, is that you go from the brahmachari ashram to the grihastha ashram. And in the grihastha ashram, one is given a license, as Prabhupada would say, for sense gratification. So having been trained in austerity and devotion to guru, higher values of life, and training for a livelihood, and been trained in sacrifice, penance, and austerity, charity, and so forth, you enter into the grihastha ashram as a duty, as an ashram. And the basic principles here is that if you want to earn money, at least you maintain a spouse. You don't just earn the money for yourself. And you have children, which you're producing good population, and you're giving in charity, such as the example given here is of digging wells, but various kinds of charity. And this is generally done by the grihasthas. The grihasthas are the only ones who have a varna, they're the only ones who have an occupation, and their main duty is to give in charity. At the same time, they're having externally what we talk about as a materialistic life. They have a home, they have furniture, they have clothing. They have jewelry, they have a bank account, they are working in the world, they're having gross and subtle sexual indulgence and enjoying the children and so forth and so on. And Prabhupada wrote, grihastha life means home, wife, children, why do you want to make it something else? He said, why do our members think it's something else? So this is the purpose of the grihastha. It actually has many, many purposes. For the individual, the purpose is to acknowledge that they're not just going to be able to live without satisfying those desires, and to do it in service, to do it in a way that's connected with Krishna. And if they do it in a way that's connected with Krishna, they'll be solidly and safely in the renounced ashrams when they're older. And the other purpose is for society in general. So much of the work that Krishna wants done in society is only rightly done by the grihasthas. So all the varnas are only done in the grihastha ashram. And Krishna wants governments. Krishna wants agriculture. Krishna wants the arts and the functions of society. So that's only done by the grihasthas. So that's there. Krishna wants good population. So therefore, there's a duty to the society, there's a duty to God, and there's certainly one is working on self-purification. And then one enters the vanaprastha ashram. So the vanaprastha ashram is populated by two groups of people. It's populated by people who came directly from the brahmachari ashram, who never had a varna, who never had any kind of sexual indulgence, and of any kind, gross or subtle. And then it's populated by people who had, just to put it grossly, sex and money. And those two people have entered, those who've never indulged in sex and money and those who have, in a righteous way. And it's interesting that Srila Prabhupada talks about this as a great act of penance. Now, why after 50 years of age? One reason is that looking at the vanaprastha ashram itself now, going on from the past, I guess we should briefly, before we do that, mention just about the sannyas ashram. So after the vanaprastha ashram, not everybody, especially those who had the brahmana varna, will go on to the sannyas ashram. Now, everybody has to die, and everybody has to prepare for death. In that sense, everyone is in the sannyas ashram at every moment because they're preparing for death. And certainly, even if one never technically leaves the vanaprastha ashram, one has to also prepare for death. But the sannyas ashram is distinct from the vanaprastha ashram in that the separation from society is more extreme. The separation from sex and money is more extreme even than in the vanaprastha ashram, that the husband and wife don't stay together at all, and the person is considered dead to the world. Consider that they've already died, that they've died before dying. So let's get to the particulars of the vanaprastha ashram. However one went into it, of course, will make some difference. because if you've gone into the Vanaprastha ashram from the Grihastha ashram, then you have a couple of alternatives that aren't available to one who went into it from the Brahmacharya ashram. And your couple of alternatives is you can go still as a married couple or separately. And even separately, there can be various degrees of communication and association, even if you don't live together. Whereas if you come to the Vanaprastha ashram from the Brahmacharya ashram, of course you are still a single person. So looking at it from the point of view of one who came through the Grihastha ashram, because that's going to be the majority of the circumstance, so some Vanaprasthas are going to stay together, husband and wife, but their relationship changes. They give up not only gross sex life, they also give up subtle sex life, the joking and teasing and flirting and all that. As Krishna says to Rukmini, the householder enjoys the sweet talks with the wife at the end of the day, so that is jettisoned. The relationship changes. It becomes more, as explained in the fourth canto of the Bhagavatam, that it's almost as if the husband's a sannyasi and the wife is a brahmachari assistant. I mean, it's really a different mood. You're co-journeyers in the spiritual life. And this should have happened gradually in the Grihastha ashram. You know, when one first gets married, I mean, even Prabhupada talked about when he first married that he was so entranced with his wife that his studies suffered. And Prabhupada says this is natural, young man, young woman. So when people first get married, anyway, things are often rather intense. And that gradually subsides, that gradually cools just by nature. It does, and most likely when people enter the Vanaprastha ashram, they've already been celibate or had very little sex life on the gross platform for quite some time. Of course, out in the material world, people get really upset when this happens and they think, oh, now I have to divorce and marry somebody else. But this is, it's a very natural occurrence. So by the time they're ready to enter into the Vanaprastha ashram, and these desires have already cooled. Also, most women lose their reproductive function by around age 50. So there's, biologically, the woman's no longer able to have children. In fact, by age 41 or 42, her ability to have children is at about 3% of a woman when she's like 17, 18 years old. And the interest in such things has normally gone down. And such is true even for materialistic persons. What to speak of persons who are engaged in bhakti. So if one is in the Grihastha ashram in bhakti, there will be a natural lessening of desires for sex and money. There'll be a natural frustration with trying to change the world and fix everything and be a great person doing this and that. One will naturally become disinterested. As we said, this even happens to some extent biologically for atheists and demons. What to speak of if one's engaged in the process of bhakti and one's consciousness is clearing, then not only is the whole process accelerated, but it is fine-tuned to a sharp point. So it's not that a person is still hanging on to the Grihastha ashram with tooth and nail and they're pried away by force. You have to renounce now. Go be thrown in the deep end. But no, it's a very natural thing. It's very natural. And many times we see even among devotees, they sort of slide into the Vanaprastha ashram without even ever saying what they're doing. They don't even say, well, let's become Vanaprasthas now. You know, the woman stops having so much interest in dressing beautifully just on her own, and the interest in their material relationship goes down, the interest in earning money goes down, the interest in trying to be some big person and fighting in the world for this or that goes down. And a person just says, you know, I'd really like to spend my time just in the processes of bhakti. So that happens at around 50 years of age. Out in the world, they call it the midlife crisis. So we don't call it the midlife crisis. We call it the midlife opportunity. So a person who is in the Grihastha ashram can be in the Vanaprastha ashram, the whole Vanaprastha ashram, with the wife. Husband and wife can still stay together. Or they can separate, like Srila Prabhupada, of course. He was in the Vanaprastha ashram separately from his wife. And with the husband and wife living separately, they may still communicate, especially in the modern day when one can communicate by phone and email and so forth. They could still see each other sometimes, or not. So when some vanaprastas, the husband and wife have no communication. Sometimes they're separate, but they have some communication. Sometimes they stay together. And I know many devotees in the vanaprastha ashram who have some kind of a combination of these. So they spend some time in the same home, but in very different parts of the home. You know, the husband now has a little cabin out in the yard, or they have two separate houses that they're staying in. I know of many couples who are doing this. You know, and sometimes they travel together, sometimes they travel separately, sometimes the wife is home with the grown children while the husband travels, sometimes they travel together, sometimes the wife is traveling. And it's a very natural and organic thing, but they still have that option of having some friendship and support from each other. And frankly, having that friendship and support from a good devotee spouse makes it much easier to be steady and stable. So when the mind says, you know, oh, I miss... No, you don't miss. You still have it to some extent. But all those options are there for one who is in the grihastha ashram. There's also varieties of vanaprastha given in the shastra. And all those varieties have... There's four varieties, which I didn't get a chance to write down the Sanskrit names. And they all have to do with how one procures food. Because after all, when you're giving up your livelihood, what are you giving up? You're giving up primarily your earning of food. So how is the vanaprastha going to eat? Of course, in our modern society, people have some savings and they have some pensions and so forth. There's some traditional vanaprastha where one just goes into the forest and eats the fruits and roots and berries in the forest, just eats whatever nature provides. That's a little difficult nowadays. First of all, the climate in most places wouldn't give you anything to eat most of the year. And second of all, you might be rounded up by your government for being a homeless person. So it might be a little difficult. The vanaprastha certainly can also beg for food. But there needs to be some kind of austerity in terms of food done by the vanaprastha. And that may vary from time to time and place to place and person to person. But there should be something. At the very least, if one hasn't already done so, one should take a strict vow of eating only Krishna prasadam, eating at regulated times, and so forth. And the vanaprastha, no matter how they came into the vanaprastha ashram, whether from the grihastha or from the brahmachari ashram, has several duties. One duty is to travel to holy places, to go to the holy places. And that is particularly needed for one in the grihastha ashram because, at least traditionally, the grihastha ashram had a griha and you were home. And if you had a very traditional life, you were probably pretty stuck in your home. If you had a cow, you were stuck at home. Right? If you were raising young children, you were pretty stuck at home. And before modern means of travel, you were pretty stuck at home. And if you were stuck at home, you were probably very attached to your home. Traditionally, it was probably your ancestral home. It was probably your father's and your grandfather's and your great-grandfather's home, and this is my home, and blah, blah, blah. So you get out of your home, and you travel, and you put yourself in different circumstances. Now, why travel? Why is travel so much emphasized for the vanaprastha and also for some of the kinds of sannyas, the parivrajak? Because travel naturally detaches you. It detaches you in many ways. First of all, you see that all human beings are engaged in basically the same struggles. It gives you and joys. It gives you a perspective on your own life. It gives you a kind of detachment for your own life. It takes you out of your own problems, your own worries. Also, travel detaches you from thinking that you're the controller, that you're the owner. It's not so much a question of do you have a physical building where you can put your books and your clothes in the place that you want them, and you'll be able to find them the next day. But whether or not you have control, in your own home you have a sense of control. This is my home, I'm running it the way that I want. When you're traveling, you don't have that. You're staying in various places, they have their rules, they have their setups, and you have to be amenable to what's going on there. It gives you a sense of Krishna being in control. Krishna's always in control, even when you're a grihastha, but once you're traveling, you're very aware of it. It's put right in front of your face that Krishna's in control, that you're dependent on him, that he's your maintainer, that he's your protector. Going to this Atmanivedanam becomes much easier when you're living on the road. Now, of course, if you're traveling, staying in, you know, as a multimillionaire with your own private jet and staying in five-star hotels with a whole bevy of servants, then such travel is not going to have that effect. One should travel as a renunciate, depending on the Lord. Also, in the Vanaprastha ashram, there needs to be some austerity in terms of money. So one is no longer earning a livelihood, one no longer has a job and a business, and one should be using money very carefully in the service of the Lord. One should not be in the mood of, I have to control my money. Now, of course, in the modern day, it may be appropriate that one still has some source of money. I know several Vanaprasthas that have money from rental properties or money from investments and inheritance and so forth, which is probably quite practical in the modern day. But one should have this mood that Mare Krishna Rake K, Rake Krishna Mare K. And in the Vanaprastha ashram, you don't have family responsibilities. You know, you shouldn't have very many fixed expenses. You know, in the Grihastha ashram, you have so many responsibilities that if the money isn't coming in, it's a catastrophe. And it's supposed to be like that, to push you to earn money. But in the Vanaprastha ashram, there isn't anything pushing you to earn money other than your own bodily maintenance. And for that, you're dependent on Krishna. So if whatever source of money one has dries up or whatever, one depends on Krishna. And this is a very important mentality of the Vanaprastha ashram, to prepare one for the total fearlessness in terms of protection that must be there before one can enter into the sannyasa ashram. And Prabhupada also mentions that the main duties of one in the renounced orders, which is the Vanaprastha and the sannyasa ashram, are to give learned discourses and to write literatures. So people in the Vanaprastha ashram should be engaged in writing and in teaching in some form, with books and with lectures. So what form that may take will vary from person to person. You know, I know one Vanaprastha who's creating audiobooks of Prabhupada's books in foreign languages. I know another Vanaprastha who's using his vast wealth that he earned as a Grihastha to finance printing Srila Prabhupada's books in foreign languages. So it may be done in various ways, but somehow to teach, to be a teacher, both through the spoken and the written word. This is the main duty of one, Prabhupada says, who's in the renounced order. So that should be there. And going to holy places, by the way, can involve going to temples. But what we can see is that one in the Vanaprastha ashram is really taking the responsibility of guiding the society. They're the elders of society. And they're not so old that all they can do is, you know, kind of hobble around. So traditionally in the sannyasa ashram, you took sannyas at 75, you could imagine that a lot of the sannyasis weren't able to do much more than stay around in a mutt, like being in an old age home, you know, and people could go to them for words of wisdom. But once you're in the Paramahamsa stage, you're not so involved in society. So the Vanaprasthas and the younger sannyasis are the main teachers and guides and elders of society. They're the spiritual grandfathers and grandmothers of the society. One of the big problems we had in the early days of the Hare Krishna movement was that our only elder, literally and figuratively, spiritually, materially, any way you can think of, was Srila Prabhupada. Most people in temples were somewhere between, you know, 18 and 29, and we didn't know anything. We didn't do it. And I would say that a tremendous number of the foolish mistakes we made, many of which have consequences to the present day, were made because there were no elders. We had ourselves cut off from that. The devotees who took sannyas, they had the role of being an elder, but they didn't have the knowledge and foundation of being an elder. They weren't an elder in fact. They were really an elder more symbolically. And we have to say, frankly, they often guided us in the wrong way. And so this is the main duty of the Vanaprastha. And what are the pitfalls? Well, if we want to understand the pitfalls, we can look at the modern parodies of these ashrams, because they are biological systems. They exist in some form in modern society. You know, the modern idea of a student is, okay, now you have free license for illicit sex and intoxication, and you can be irresponsible. And the only thing you're studying is how to make money for yourself, how to become a successful person, as someone who has a lot of wealth for themselves. And, you know, don't take responsibility, don't do sacrifice, just find yourself. after you found yourself, then you can take responsibility if you want to. So that's the modern student life. And the modern grihastha ashram has practically been thrown out the window. As Prabhupada says, marriage is almost an imagination. People get married very late. Instead of getting married at the threshold of youthful life, they spend their youthful life in illicit sex. They spend their youthful life in earning money for themselves and just, you know, traveling around the world, getting experiences and so forth, and not really contributing to society. So this is our... And then when they do get married, then they use birth control and abortion and, you know, just have a couple kids, raise them also to be sense gratifiers, don't give in charity in ways that really help the society and so forth. And the, you know, the modern retired life is you sit around playing card games, as Prabhupada talks about in Nectar of Instruction, you know, or you travel to the, you know, you take cruises to the Panama Canal and to Antarctica and things like that. You know, and the modern sannyas, as we said, is you're just staying in an old age home. So we have to be very careful, we who want to do the actual system of ashram, that if we want the full benefit from the ashram system, then we should do it properly. Unfortunately, and it is unfortunate, even among our devotee society, there's, I'd say it's a minority of people who use the ashram system in any way that resembles what's given in the Shastra. I'd say it's definitely the minority. We have a view of stay brahmachari as long as possible and then, you know, finally become a grihastha in your 30s and 40s when you're practically dying, which is a total perversion. Or we have, you know, well, when you're a grihastha, don't be a real grihastha. Be a traveling preacher as if you're a vanaprastha or a sannyasi, and don't have very many kids. And I mean, and people who do that, then they hit middle age and the desires are still raging. You know, or be a vanaprastha and sannyasi as if you really are a maharaja, as if you really are a great king, you know, with huge palaces and millions of dollars and adoring women and so forth. So we have all these ways in which we don't really take advantage of the ashram system. I'd say there are some who do. We have some real brahmacharis and some real grihasthas and some real vanaprasthas and some real sannyasis. But often we don't. And we, you know, also the divorce, remarriage is another parody of the grihastha ashram. And unfortunately, these messed up versions are a reality, I'd say, for the majority of our members. It's rare. It's the exception that I meet people who are going through the ashram system properly. So the good news is that bhakti is independent. That's the good news. Bhakti is not dependent on any varna or ashram. Bhakti is not even dependent on piety or impiety. Otherwise, Magrari and Jaghai and Madhai couldn't have gone directly from extreme tamagun, not just tamagun, but really low tamagun, to bhakti. They didn't go through any system. We don't find where the prostitute who got converted to bhakti by Haridas Thakur, she wasn't told, oh, get married now. You just, oh, go, okay, now become a vanaprastha. She directly became a vanaprastha and directly entered into bhakti. So that's there. Bhakti is independent. At the same time, to whatever extent we can utilize the principles of the ashram system, we should do so. Why not? We should accept what's favorable and reject what's unfavorable. And it's rare that anyone is going to be perfect in any of these ashrams. That's rare. And there are people who advertise, you know, well, we have the perfect traditional brahmachari ashram. Well, we're perfect grihasthas. I don't know. I'm not really convinced. First of all, Krishna says every endeavor is covered with fault, as smoke is covered with fire. So I'm sure that even 10,000, 15,000 years ago, every endeavor was still covered by some sort of fault. And what to speak of in Kali Yuga, where it's an ocean of faults. So rather than focusing on our faults, take the principle of each ashram and do the best that one can. Take as many of the principles of each ashram as we can and institute that in our lives as a basis for bhakti. And let's not confuse these ashram systems with bhakti itself. There's always a difference, between the ashram system and bhakti itself. So we started out by saying that everything's sarva kalamidam brahma, everything's part of Krishna, and therefore even these physiological, psychological processes that we naturally go through in life can be spiritualized. But they are natural processes that are being spiritualized. They are not bhakti itself. Bhakti is not dependent on the ashram system. Bhakti is independent. And one can go through the ashram system perfectly and not develop bhakti. Shama evahi kevala. So our main business, grihetaka vanetaka, wherever you are, whether you're at home, in the forest, whether you're a 36-year-old, five times divorced with kids from each spouse person, whether you're earning an income without a spouse, you know, whether you're a vanaprastha living in a big villa in Vrindavan with large investments in the bank, whatever one is, to somehow engage in the Krishna consciousness movement, to somehow engage in preaching Lord Chaitanya's mission, to somehow engage in falling in love with Krishna. Yes, we can make it easier for ourselves by going through the ashram system. Certainly. Certainly. The more one can be a bona fide vanaprastha, a bona fide sannyasi, a bona fide grahastha, a bona fide brahmachari, oh, do it. Don't cheat. Don't cut corners. If one has the capacity to do it right, do it as right as possible. And at the same time, be honest. You know, this is what's happened to me in my life. This is how my life story has played out. Wasn't the script that I thought it would be, but this is where I am. Or, you know, be honest about what one needs in one's life. Being honest and authentic is so important. You know, if you say, well, this is what I still need to be stable and sane. Better, as Prabhupada said, an honest street sweeper than a charlatan meditator. You know, and even if one doesn't take vanaprastha, even if one stays in the grihastha ashram their whole life, you know, we have friends where it appeared that they could enter into the vanaprastha ashram, even their spouse died and they were already 60 years old, and they said, I can't do it. You know, I can't do it. I have to stay in the grihastha ashram. Okay, stay in the grihastha ashram, but go on preaching and go on chanting Hare Krishna. And this is, of course, the story of Gajendra the elephant, where Prabhupada said the crocodile got strength from the water and Gajendra was losing strength in the water. So we should be situated according to what's best for us and what's best for us now. And that may change. Okay, one thing I can look at. I see a question here. What's the difference between vanaprastha and sannyas after brahmachari? So the difference between the brahmachari who goes to direct vanaprastha and sannyas and the brahmachari who stays in the brahmachari ashram is that the vanaprastha and sannyas ashrams have a lot of independence. The sannyasi is the most independent person in the social order. There is an accelerating amount of independence. So the grihastha has much more independence than the brahmachari, the vanaprastha much more independence than the grihastha, and the sannyasi much more independence than the vanaprastha. So when a brahmachari goes to the vanaprastha ashram, they are taking a lot of responsibility. And we see this in our Krishna consciousness movement. Oh, I see. What's the question between going directly to vanaprastha and going directly to sannyas after brahmachari? Well, the sannyas ashram is much more of a civil death, of preparing for death. In the vanaprastha ashram, you're still part of society. You haven't died to society. In the sannyas ashram, you have. In the sannyas ashram, you're supposed to have complete fearlessness. In the vanaprastha ashram, you are developing your fearlessness. It's something like the brahmachari ashram, you're not in your career, you're developing your career. Your career is in the grihastha ashram. In the vanaprastha ashram, you're growing your fearlessness. You're taking steps towards your fearlessness. Like sometimes Prabhupada says, the vanaprastha may travel for 2 months and then go home, and travel for a couple months and then go home. Whereas the sannyasi, you know, you're out there. Of course, even the sannyas, originally, you know, they can start by living outside the village and their family brings them food. You're not pushed off a cliff. But when you take sannyas, you have to, A, already be fearless, and you have to, B, not see a distinction between man and woman. These are two of the things that Srila Prabhupada says as qualifications for entering the sannyas ashram. Those are not qualifications for entering the vanaprastha ashram. That's developed in the vanaprastha ashram. And I mean, I can say that I see it practically. You know, I've been in the vanaprastha ashram now for how long? Since 96. So 19 years. And I can see very practically that how it evolves gradually. Just like in the brahmacharya ashram, things are gradual. You start off learning your alphabet and you end up at the end a scholar and an expert in your field. In the grihastha ashram, you start off being madly intoxicated by your spouse and full of energy for doing things in the world and earning a livelihood, and you come out at the other end being a spiritual friend of your spouse and no longer thinking that you're going to change anybody but yourself. And in the vanaprastha ashram, you start off, well, okay, I guess I'm going to start dressing simply, I'm going to change my eating, and it's kind of very tentative. And after some time, you come to the point of fearlessness and detachment, where fearlessness and detachment are just part of your breathing, they're just part of your life, but you still don't start that way. So this is a brahmachari who can go directly to the sannyas ashram, as we said, is extremely unusual. It's just extremely unusual. I mean, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati did that, and Madhvacharya and Sankaracharya did that, but that would certainly be the exception. So even in the traditional mats, a brahmachari who's preparing for sannyas has some period of preparation where they're as a vanaprastha. Okay, I'm going to unplug this so now I'm on the speaker, and which will decrease the quality of the mic. I'm sorry. Unplug my high quality mic here. And if there are any other questions or comments.
I have a question, but I'll wait for those. Anyone else?
Yes, Hare Krishna.
Can you hear me?
Hare Bol.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Mahesh spoke first. Would you mind, Doctor? Mahesh, he asked.
I had a couple of notes here from the class, which I think was very excellent, truly excellent as always, and a joy to hear you speaking, Mataji. That's fantastic. Great theoretical knowledge, but from the practical point of view, I think there were several flaws in your speech.
Okay.
This is something for you to consider, because I really like your classes. I think they are fantastic. But there are some things that I have to disagree with, or perhaps that I think that should be considered by the Assembly of Devotees.
Sure.
You mentioned, for instance, Mugrari the Hunter and the prostitute that was initiated by Haridas Thakur. I mean, come on. If Haridas Thakur would give me initiation, I would take sannyas tomorrow myself. You know, let's face it, you gotta have a guru that has that potency. I mean, these are very special people. And Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, he wasn't an ordinary person either. He was a manjari. They were sent directly from the spiritual world. These are not ordinary people. Even Srila Prabhupada was not an ordinary person. That's why you are speaking like that and you have so much knowledge, is because you took shelter of an amazing personality named Srila Prabhupada.
So if I can just interrupt you for a second. So I think what you're trying to say is people who can attain bhakti without going through the regular pattern or something extraordinary.
Unless you have a system, which is what Prabhupada was trying to organize, a system called Varnashram Dharma, but we really don't have it in our society. And without that system, for you to speak about Varnashram Dharma, I mean, to speak about taking vanaprastha without a Varnashram Dharma is pointless. You can't take vanaprastha or sannyas without a system. You can't. Unless you were initiated by someone like Srila Prabhupada and he himself would take personal care of you.
Well, I'm going to respectfully disagree, because I know of many, many people right now who are grand disciples of Srila Prabhupada or great grand disciples of Srila Prabhupada who definitely have taken vanaprastha and sannyas and are the real deal. I mean, I know them. I'm thinking of like Kadamba Kanana Swami. He's a disciple of Jaidoja Swami, so he's a grand disciple of Srila Prabhupada. And he was in the grihastha ashram and then the vanaprastha ashram, and now he's in the sannyas ashram. And I wouldn't go so far as to say that he was perfectly in any of those ashrams. I mean, I doubt that he would say that. I haven't asked him that. To whatever extent is possible in Kali Yuga, I'd say that he's an example of somebody. And he's not the only one. So I think I did make the point that I don't know very many people who have gone, who would even say themselves that they're perfectly traditionally in any of these ashrams.
Yeah, it's rare.
It's very rare. Very rare. Yes. Therefore, we take what we can. You take, okay, the principle of the sannyas ashram, the principle of the vanaprat, the principle of the grahasa, and you apply the details as you can in time, place, and circumstance. No, I do not know vanaprastas who are living in the forest, eating roots and berries, wearing old torn clothing, and letting their nails and hair grow. I don't know vanaprastas who are living like that. No, I don't. But I do know vanaprastas who have given up gross and subtle sex life, who have given up attachment to money, who are engaged in traveling and preaching the holy name of the Lord, who are writing books and giving learned discourses. I know both men and women in that category. I know men and women who are doing this as a team. Burjan, Jagatirini come to mind. There's many, many more, couples who are doing this more and more and more. And I know of many people doing this separately from their spouse. So I do know of many people who are in the Vanaprastha ashram. They're each doing it somewhat differently from each other. Some of them are Prabhupada's disciples. Some are grand disciples. Some are great-grand disciples. And I do see it practically. Are they perfect? I don't think any of them would say that they're perfect. Are they following all the details of the scriptural injunctions? Are the women wearing dreadlocks, like it says in the fourth canto? No. But that's a time, place, and circumstance detail. So I think that was my point about practicality.
But I think the point is that we still, I think Srila Prabhupada would like to have like what we used to call a devotee factory. In other words, some kind of a community or a place where actually the Varnashram Dharma system could be established. And we really don't know of any place like that in our society. Or maybe there is some places, just that we don't know about them. I don't even know. I'm looking for them. Where is the community where we can raise our children in a Varnashram Dharma system so they can go through this process of brahmacharya, grihastha life, vanaprastha, and sannyas? We really need this.
We
really
do.
Need this in our society.
We do need it. I mean, there are places where we're working on it. There are definitely places where we're working on it. I personally, from my own experience, I'd say it has to start with a proper conception of the brahmacharya ashram. And my own take is that the main place where this is messed up is the brahmacharya ashram. And if we were to get the brahmacharya ashram right, then other things would be right. So if I can speak very frankly, and this is being recorded, so it's a little risky, but if I can speak very frankly, most of our devotees are not being trained in the brahmacharya ashram at all anymore. They're just going to regular schools, regular education. They're not going to anything resembling a gurukula. Then even most of our Gurukula schools, even the ones that are excellent, they also struggle to have some traditional understanding of brahmachari in terms of either specific training for a livelihood or, you know, devotion to guru, learning the shastra, and so forth. It's been a real struggle. There's not much money for schools. There's not much support for schools. Then the brahmachari ashrams in the temples, I mean, one GBC said this just a couple weeks ago to me, that instead of being training and educational systems, they're often just a living facility for, you know, cheap labor for the temples. And they're not really training them. I know of one brahmachari ashram where as soon as the brahmachari says he wants to marry, he has a month to get out, even though he's not been given any kind of a training for a livelihood or any kind of a training on how to be a grihastha. Another big problem with the brahmacharya ashram, and I say this all over the world, is this very non-Vedic idea that stay a brahmachari as long as possible. Stay a brahmachari till you break. And I believe that that in and of itself is a huge problem as far as establishing varnashram. That we should tell young men that by the time you're 18, 19 years old, you should pretty much have chosen, are you going to go right to the Vanaprastha ashram or are you going to go right to the Grihastha ashram? And by 24, 25, they have to make a firm decision. I'm going to become a Vanaprastha or I'm going to become a Grihastha. Another thing in the Brahmachari ashram is if people do want to stay Brahmachari in terms of celibate, I believe we make a huge mistake by keeping most of those people in the Brahmachari ashram, that by age 24, 25, one who wants lifetime celibacy should become a Vanaprastha and not be in the Brahmachari ashram anymore. That we're working against the psychology of a young adult to want some independence and some freedom. And if we freed up the lifetime celibates to be Vanaprasthas at age 24 or 25, to actually designate them as being in a different ashram, then they could make a huge contribution to the society, number one. Number two, they'd be much more likely to keep their celibate status. I think one reason that people who genuinely want to be brahmacharis end up getting married in their 30s and 40s is that they're kept as brahmacharis instead of allowed to be vanaprasthas. And so their natural desire for independence and their natural desire to do something as a person with youthful energy isn't getting channeled properly. Yes, someone wrote here, Sankarshan and his wife are also excellent examples of vanaprastha living together, preaching throughout the world. There's so many. Yadubar and Vishaka are another example. I mean, many examples like that. And again, we see that it happens in a very gradual and natural way. And then people on their own. We also have women who never married and who went directly from being a student to being a Vanaprastha, Prasanta, Srimati, there's another one, Siddha Lalasa, I think her name is, in India. Another one in London, I can't remember her name. So there's many examples like that of all these varieties. Anyway, that's my suggestion. And of course, my suggestion is coming from my years of dedication to the Gurukul system and my years of working with children and young adults. And then also traveling and seeing all the pain and suffering that people are going through because the Brahmachari ashram is not being handled properly. So I think get your foundation right. Once the foundation's right, then everything else starts falling into place. You know, you start, then you'll have solid grahastas, and then you'll have real vanaprasthas. And the Brahmachari ashram people should be getting counseling as to how to understand, am I attached or am I detached? Can I function without energy from the opposite sex, without money? And like that, you know, what do I want more, security or freedom?
Dada?
Yeah, I have a few short questions. I think it was a very practical class. I mean, extremely practical, extremely, you know, reasonable, retired life, you know, even the materialists go through that process, but they go through it differently because they don't have any sort of spiritual education.
Right.
But, you know, I was really impressed. You're very articulate, Brahma Didi. Madhukanta passed a comment the other day that you should be preaching in universities or something. You found a real voice that can cross over into, you know, all kinds of people would be attracted to what you're saying. But I have a couple of short questions. Grihastha means home life, home wife. Why do they want to make it something else? Mm-hmm. You said that at one point. What was that? I didn't quite understand why Prabhupada would say that.
Because if you're a grihastha but you're not doing that, then you're not a real grihastha. And if you're not a real grihastha, the benefits you get from the grihastha ashram are very minimal. With each of these ashrams,
wife, children.
Yeah, if you don't do that, you know, if you can think, it's so easy to understand if you look at the other ashrams.
Yeah, I didn't look at my watch for a while, and I.
What? Hare Krishna? I lost.
No,
I had to mute them.
Okay.
It's okay now. Go on.
I think it's like this with anything. If you don't do it right, you don't get much benefit out of it. If you don't follow a recipe or you don't know the principles of cooking, your preparation's not going to turn out very good. So it's the same thing.
So not all Vanaprastha ashram, those in that ashram take sannyas, especially Brahmins?
Maybe I didn't say that properly. It's especially for the Brahmanas.
For the Brahmanas.
Yeah,
okay.
there's several places where Prabhupada says that the Shudras only have Grihastha ashram, the Vaishyas have Brahmachari and Grihastha, the Kshatriyas have Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, and only the Brahmanas have Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, and Sannyas. So he says that in several places. Then there's other places where Prabhupada says everyone should take sannyas regardless of the Varna. So you have two seemingly contradictory instructions. And I would say the way to put those together is to say that everybody has to be a sannyasi in one sense at all time, because death can come in any moment. And everyone should be a sannyasi in the sense that all of us have to develop fearlessness and detachment and atmanivedanam. So I'd say in that sense, everybody has to take sannyas. But as far as formally taking sannyas, that was particularly for those in the Brahmana Varna. It definitely, in Vedic society, not everybody entered into the sannyas ashram as a formal ashram. So, and probably there were many people, like Prabhupada says, you know, who didn't even take Vanaprastha as a formal ashram. I mean, look, it's a lot better for people to stay in the Grihastha ashram than to become debauchees. So that's also there. And we do have to take that into consideration. And then you have Prabhupada saying you must. You have to take Vanaprastha. You know, so I take it as a general principle that everybody should become Vanaprastha at least by midlife. At the same time, if somebody's going to crack their head taking a Vanaprastha, you know, stay a Grihastha and chant Hare Krishna. So this
I have a question, Mother Irmala.
You know what? Actually, before we do this, first of all, Pushkar wants to say something, I think, and then Vidant, are you done?
Yes.
Okay. Radha Rupini, let me just unmute Pushkar Prabhu, because I had to mute him. There's too much noise coming through, but I think he wanted to say something. So just, can you hold on just 1 second?
Yes.
Okay, Pushkar, I'm sorry you're making too much noise. Did you want to say something?
I'm amazed I didn't make any noise, but yeah, I guess I automatically...
You were making noise.
It sounds like a teacher with little children. Now I put you in the corner because you're making too much noise.
I was just going to make some comments that, like, have nothing to do with her class. No, they do have something to do with her. Just some that I could remember. Like, one thing I remember, there was that Prabhupada in Hawaii one time said, in 75, I believe, was could have been 76, that it was something about some people being married, and Prabhupada said, if they can't have children after 2 years, let them take Vanaprastha and go preach. In other words, like, they don't have kids, and then he said 2 years. So, like, whoa, that's heavy duty. I mean, in other words, he was really pushing preaching amongst everybody, and didn't sound like they were, you know. In other words, like, maybe biologically they couldn't have the kids or for some reason. And so many times we read and heard, Pancha Swardham or Vanam Brajet, once you go to the forest at 50. Prabhupada pushed that so many times, right?
Yes, he did.
Anyway, and I was going to bring in an anecdote. When I was in Europe, in Italy, I saw Veda Vyas, who's now known as Bhakti Swami, Gauravani Swami. I hadn't seen him in a long, long time. And I said, Mom, Maharaj, I haven't seen you as a sannyasi. This is nice. And he said, what about you? Like that. And I was with my wife. So I said, well, let me tell you something. Prabhupada told me I should paint and I would go back to Godhead. So what's better? If I'm a painter, it doesn't sound like I'm much of a Vanaprastha, or what to speak of a sannyasi. I may be a little bit of a Vanaprastha. And then he thought for a second. He said, no, better to follow Prabhupada. Yeah, you should just keep painting. So I said, you're more intelligent than me. You figure it out. And then, like, living in Alachua, I want to have a, we have a very good perspective on what you were talking about, the lack of a brahmachari system. We have a Gurukula, which is a day school. There's about I'd say maximum one out of five parents brings their kids to the temple, other than when they're mandatorily have to come on Tuesday. Of course, it should go on every day that they bring them. But, you know, those of us old timers, we look at a situation, okay, it's better than nothing. Yeah, they come on Tuesday. They come on Sunday, some people less. So they're not getting trained, even though it's a school. And then when I went to Radhadesh for the first time, I saw that many of the students, if there were any, they never came to much of the programs, maybe at night, a little bit here and there. So I asked, I'm good at like snooping around asking, and it came out that, yeah, even the principals discussed it because they don't follow. I mean, what is the training? I mean, Prabhupada would not be pleased that you're just getting some academic training on what is this, what is that, theoretical, but nobody's even coming to the program not very much. And so you see, like here we have Alachua, the biggest temple in North America, maybe even the biggest ones in the Western world. Irmala, you go all over the world, you know. So there's a lot of people here. There ain't no brahmachari. We just have Yamaraj, and we have some Vana guys who put on saffron, like Shankar Das, who are 68, 9 years old. And there's nobody new. We have ladies in charge. They don't know how to train a brahmachari. There's nobody else training them. So if they ain't doing it here, we had one legitimate guy, a local guy, Dr. Josh, and he went on the road distributing books. He decided to stay up and go to the 14th Street Harinam and join that group. So, I mean, who's going to stay on a farm? It's like, where are they getting trained? There's a little bit of it at the Krishna House. That's there. But they mostly joining after 25 or, yeah, you know, in the West. So when you say that at 25 they should start taking Vanaprastha, that sounds a little funny to me. And because even in the old days, most people weren't ready. I mean, if you say the first quarter of your life and it's just your spiritual life starts at 20, and you'd have to have some training. You're not 5 years old. So they're not getting trained at five. The gurukuls are failure pretty much, except there's day schools. They are getting trained because they leave it and they go to college and they get trained in how to, you know, do the worldly thing. But there's none of that other stuff, like the spiritual stuff. A little bit of it, a little bit of it here in Malachua. But, yeah, we have a lot of bachelor daddies and a lot of assorted people. Of course, you could contrast that and say that you have in this 12 Mahajans, Bhishma Dev, he doesn't fit the cookie cutter type brahmachari, but he's a brahmachari. The four Kumaras, we can always say all these people are Mahajans, so we can't compare to them. But then Prabhupada said, why every brahmachari wants to carry a stick? And he also said the Western boys are not fit for sannyas. And he gave, you know, he may have given Sarabi the only one after he made the statement. And you also, one thing I have to, you said kind of ambiguous things. You said, no, I've seen many like Kadamba Kanada. Well, we have others like, you know, second generation brahmacharis who are going into sannyas ashram without doing much vana. They do some vana prasa, that's true. They're in between. They're on the sannyas waiting list till they're 45 or whatever. Right.
They're really vana prastas. I mean, even someone like Yamaraj, he's not in the brahmachari ashram. You know, Dravida, yeah. Prabhu, Judhakarma Prabhu, they are brahmacharis in the sense of being celibates, but they're not in the brahmachari ashram. No way. We're not recognizing them as vanaprastas. We're not saying he's a vanaprastas, but they are vanaprastas. They definitely are. So these people who are, you know, they're wearing the brahmachari dhoti, and we call them brahmacharis, but they're taking responsibility for a preaching project and so forth, and they're living basically independent. Amala Bhakti Prabhu, who recently took sannyas, he was living as a vanaprastha for years and years and years.
Decades.
Yeah, I mean, he wasn't living
He joined. He was a sannyasi for 20 years before he even joined.
Right.
A real sannyasi. But a Maivadi sannyasi.
Right, right.
Oh, he's celibate. He wasn't like, you know, hanging out in the corner.
That's right. So it's interesting, you know, we're kind of running out of time here. Prabhupada says, first varna, then ashram. And my own, I hate to say humble, but anyway, my own humble take on this is that in the modern society, among devotees and non-devotees, we're much better able to preach about varna than about ashram. So we can preach, take your occupation, take your livelihood, and here's how to use it as yajna. Here's how to use it as an offering. Make your occupation an offering. That people will hear. And it's something that people are already trying to do. People are already trying to have jobs and occupations and businesses that have community responsibility and global responsibility you know, there's other religious groups that talk about giving in charity from your occupation and using your occupation for the glory of God. And that is something we can preach. But ashram, I see right now at the present point in Kali Yuga, it is almost impossible. And therefore, I keep going to the pick up the principles, do what you can, and bhakti is independent. Understand the principles of the ashram, what you can. And until and unless we can establish a real brahmachari ashram that starts at 5 and that ends somewhere between 15 and 24, the rest of the stuff is not going to come together. You can't work at it from the sannyas ashram. And I'm going to say, frankly, I was one of the founding members of the Grihastha Vision Team. You can't work at it starting at the Grihastha Ashram. That can't be your starting place. You know, you take people, they're 25 years old. What are you going to do for your livelihood? I don't know.
Hare Krishna. Is that the idea of Radha Desh and places like that, where they get this vocational training, sort of, they can become a teacher,
I've been one of the faculty at Radha Desh for a long time, and Radha Desh had a very particular purpose from the get-go. It's always been a theological college, and it had the purpose of training Vaishnav theologians, so it was a very, very narrow vocational training. People who would go on to be chaplains, or people who would go on to get master's PhDs and be professors of theology and so forth. There aren't that many careers that are available to people with a bachelor's in theology. And so we've always had a very small number of students, and it's just even a tiny, tiny slice of the Brahminical vocation. Basically, you know, we saw that there was nobody offering an undergraduate degree in Vaishnav theology, and that the need was there, but it's always been a very small, it's got a very, 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 very narrow focus. There has been talk for a long time of setting up a college in Mayapur that would have a greater focus. Of course, we also have Bhaktivedanta College in Hungary that has an English branch in Finland, and that's a quite different project. That project, I'd say, has a little broader focus. We offer there a bachelor's and a master's in theology. We also offer the only undergraduate degree in yoga. So that offers several career paths, but it's still pretty narrow. We're still only offering a few degrees. You know, to have a college where we really offered a wide range of vocations in Krishna consciousness. I mean, Bhaktivedanta College is now offering a master's in business and MBA online. So that's a step in the right direction. It's been many years to get there. But eventually, Krishna willing, we'll have colleges where we do offer the full range of vocational training in Krishna conscious perspective. And that will be a huge step forward, and then there'll be a way to go seamlessly from a devotee elementary and high school to a college education, and there will be some specific training for a livelihood. So that's coming, but very, very slowly. And I see we have so many misconceptions about the Brahmachari Ashram, and that is what feeds the rest of the system improperly. Anyway, I talked about it today because that was what Prabhupada talked about in the purport today. But as far as what we can practically do in the world, Prabhupada says varna first, then ashram. And I would say our emphasis would be there.
The varna has this weird connotation where people think of caste system, so you kind of have a wangle around that all the time.
Yeah, that's
true. Or you're a sudra. Yeah, you know, it just doesn't.
That's true, and at the same time, it's easier to do it. It's easier to ask people to do it. You say to a person, okay, what do you love to do? You know, you say, I love to paint. Oh, okay. Then your function is to create the beauty of society in a way that takes people to Krishna.
But you can't tell people you're a shudra, you know?
You know what? Can I interrupt? Because I know that Mother Urmila has got to go.
I do. In fact, I have a chiropractic appointment at 9, and I have some things to do first. Did you have another question, Ramananda Prabhu?
That's okay. Let Mother Urmila go. I can call her up. It's just that I think that there's no place for women in this Varna Ashram. I know of and I understand everything you're talking about, all these wonderful colleges for all the young people, but for the people our age, I recently know of a lady who her husband just decided, okay, I'm moving out, and I'm going to be,
retired.
Retired, and that's it. And so she's left with taking care of everything financially and more. And this is supposed to be very Krishna conscious.
Well, that happens all the time. It happens both ways. Sometimes it's the wife who leaves, sometimes it's the husband who leaves. It happens all the time. I mean, in one sense, it even happened to Srila Prabhupada, where, he was over 50. I think he was 54. And his wife pretty much said to him, he said, look, is it tea or me? And she said, I guess I'll take the tea. it happens. And it happens to materialistic persons, and it happens to devotees. Everything that happens out in the world happens to devotees. We get cancer, we get strokes, we get someone saying, time to go, bye-bye. Whoa, time to go, bye-bye. What do you mean, time to go, bye-bye? And
it's not really an ashram. It's not really,
you make it an ashram.
You can just do that.
You make it an ashram. Just like Vidura.
Okay.
Just like Vidura. So Duryodhan said to him, what is this kept son of a maidservant? Throw him out and leave him with only his breath. So that wasn't exactly the way that Vidura planned to take Vanaprastha. I don't think so. I don't think Vidura sat down when he was 20 years old and said, the way I'm going to take Vanaprastha is Duryodhan threatens to throw me out. But when he heard that, he said, Krishna is saying, time to take Vanaprastha. And we wouldn't have this conversation in the Bhagavatam otherwise. This is Vidura.
So then we shouldn't tell women that they have to be quiet, peaceful, and chaste or whatever. And, because they actually have to be strong like men and learn how to survive in this world. Because they're going to be left. And if they don't survive, they're just going to die.
Well, even Draupadi and Subhadra, when their husbands wanted to take Vanaprastha, Maharaj Yudhisthira didn't even talk to his brothers about it. He just changed his dress, gave up everything, started walking north. His brothers saw him doing it and said, oops, I guess we better go too. They didn't say anything to Draupadi and Subhadra.
Yeah.
And Draupadi and Subhadra said, oops, time for us to go.
And so then women should be strong.
I think Draupadi was pretty strong. She seems like a pretty strong woman to me. The idea,
but yet women that are strong are criticized for being strong.
Well, just smile at them. If people say that, just smile. And the Mandodari, Draupadi, Sita. Sita was left. What are we talking about anybody else? Sita Devi.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to start crying if I talk about this, Hare Krishna. She was left pregnant. She wasn't even ready to take Vanaprastha. She was dumped in the Vana. There you go. Go in the Vana, pregnant lady. And she lived as a Tapasvini.
Mm-hmm.
She was a strong lady. I don't see that being chaste and faithful and modest means that you're a useless mouse. The examples we have in the Shastra of the most chaste ladies are not useless mice. They're not.
I always have thought that being chaste and faithful was going to keep you protected.
No, surrender to Krishna is going to keep you protected. And what does it say? Those who do not have atmatattva, they take shelter of the fallible soldiers. And when we have a shelter and a fallible soldier, sometimes Krishna shows us that it's a fallible soldier by force.
Mm-hmm.
And, my dear, in one sense, this happens to all of us. With somebody, it's their body that breaks. With someone else, their bank account breaks. With someone else, their spouse dies. Or their, I know a young woman whose spouse got a rare form of cancer. And he's still living, but he's barely living. And he's not much of a husband to her in any of the traditional senses of being a husband. He's become more like one of her kids. And, it's not that following the rules of karma are going to protect us.
Mm-hmm.
It's surrender to Krishna that's going to protect us. When Maharaj Parikit was cursed, He came to the sages at Namasaranya, and he says, I understand that Krishna took the form of this curse to help in my detachment. So sometimes people think that if the way that you got went into vanaprastha or sannyas life was because you had a bad kid or because your spouse left you or because your business failed, that it's not real. I hear this a lot. You know, you're only a real vanaprastha, you're only a real sannyasi if your life was all peachy and wonderful, and then you said, I think I want to take vanaprastha. And that if there was some problem in your life that pushed you off the deep end, that it can't be real. But even if something pushed you off into the deep end, if you embrace it and you say, Krishna has taken the form, like Maharaj Anga when he had Vena as his son, and he said, this is Krishna. Krishna has given me this demoniac son so that I'll run off and live in the forest. Krishna's given me that, you know, Krishna has set this up. When Prabhupada's business failed, also Prabhupada said, he said, at first he thought, oh, God must be angry with me. I've done something wrong. I planned for this business to fund my preaching for my Guru Maharaj, and now it's failed. Now what will I do? And then he remembered that verse that Krishna says, if I love my devotee, I take away his material shelters. And then Prabhupada said, oh, I could see Krishna wanted me to go in another direction. So when these things happen in our life, and in some form or another they happen to everybody, at some point that our material shelters are gone, and you just say, wow, what do I do? You know, what do I do? You thought if you were just obedient to the temple president, you'd be protected. Then your temple president steals the money and runs off to Tahiti, you know. Mm-hmm. Or your temple president says, well, now I don't like you anymore. You know, now you have to leave this temple because I don't like you anymore. Whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, you think your guru's going to be your shelter, and your guru falls down, and you find out he's been seeing prostitutes for 15 years, and you know, you think your money's going to be your shelter and the stock market crashes. You think your body's going to be your shelter and it gets cancer. And Hare Krishna. Krishna's our shelter. And however we come to detachment and renunciation, it's glorious. And I will say that when we come to detachment and renunciation through some crises, there will usually be some pain and some mourning. You know, think of it as going to a funeral. And you're taking this fallible soldier, and it's like you have this thing that's broken now, and there's some grieving and there's some mourning, and that's okay. And one can do that, but embrace Krishna, and embrace Krishna's lotus feet, and hold them, and Krishna, this is your kindness, this is your mercy. And Prabhupada said this about himself. Prabhupada said this about himself. Maharaj Parikit said this about himself. That Krishna's pushing us to do what we need to do, but we're resisting it. And if Srila Prabhupada can say that about himself, and Maharaj Parikit can say it about himself, what to speak of us? If we're holding on to things that we need to let go, and we haven't let go of them voluntarily, Krishna will push us because he loves us. I need to stop now. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.